Voices of VR podcast. Hello, my name is Kent Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing my series from IFA Doc Lab 2025, today's episode is with a piece called Eternal Habitat, which is a immersive dome piece by an architect named Sergey. So Sergey has got a history and background in architecture and kind of self-identifies as like a paper architect, exploring a lot of these kind of speculative architecture ideas and concepts. And so when he first graduated from grad school for like 3 years, he was entering in all these speculative architecture competitions. And then as he starts to get into these architectural visualization through the lens of these different programs that he's able to then kind of also project onto a dome, then he starts to go back through his backlog of speculative architecture concepts and ideas and starts to actually prototype them out to be able to show them in a more of a cinematic experience for people to kind of explore these more abstract concepts of paper architecture and speculative architecture. So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Sergey happened on Monday, November 17th, 2025 at IFA Doc Lab in Amsterdam, Netherlands. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
My name is Sergey Prokofiev. I'm originally from Ukraine, but living for many years in Berlin. And I architect, had master's degrees in architecture, got this in architectural university in Ukraine. But for the last couple of years, or last seven years, I'm more shifting to the more immersive film production, and specifically for the planetarium format, full dome format.
Great. And maybe you could give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into working with immersive media for the dome.
After university, I was, during university, during my studies, I was passionate about conceptual ideas, architectural competitions, and rather something to be built in physical world. And I participated in many architectural competitions, and it was kind of I did just the 3 years in a row only competitions. I was kind of addicted of competitions of architecturals.
But so this is after you graduated, you're doing all these competitions.
Two 3 years after I get my master. But all kind of this project was made for architect. Basically, it's not for people, for citizens. It's just like open discussion about what is possible, kind of speculation about architecture. And all this project was remained just on the paper and never has to be built.
And from my other interviews I've done before, that there's a kind of whole branch of this more speculative architecture that people self-identify as paper architects. Maybe you could, you know, describe if that's something that you identify as like a paper architect, or I'm just curious to hear a little bit more elaboration of this term of the paper architect.
I think this paper architecture coming from 70s when kind of new wave of, but I'm not so well, it was a historical meaning of this paper architecture, but it existing so many kind of vector of architectural thoughts that especially some project doesn't have to be built. It's just more kind of utopian or dystopian and provocative ideas to question something in real life. But for me, now probably no one call it already paper architecture. It's more speculative architecture. for me, it was always lack of information that I can share with people, because it was just for competition and only jury can see it. And then maybe it could be published in some magazine, but who is buying architectural magazine, also architects. And that was not so much connection with another disciplines.
Maybe before we go into the kind of transition from this traditional forms of architecture and blueprints and paper and other ways that you communicate architecture into VR and other spatial mediums, maybe describe a little bit more, like what drew you to this more speculative branch of architecture, and like what was it around those conversations that you were interested in, like pushing the edge of what was possible, or really provoking or starting conversations?
If I understand you right, basically for me it was kind of architectural storytelling was most interesting part, and because my kind of passion was always during the architectural studies more about art and drawings and of course, like when you have an idea and you realize this on the paper, it's much faster than the building has to be built. Yeah, then it, when it's already built, it gets old and it's already need to be renovated or something like that. And for me, this like a time frame was too long, yeah, to realize the idea. And all this kind of my ideas was very focusing on kind of presentation or sharing the ideas, but not building the buildings.
Yeah, you can go a lot faster and generate a lot more ideas more quickly if you don't have to build anything around it. What's that?
Yeah, and for me, I was more enjoying the process of thinking about and visualizing this building, and not kind of all phases of architectural realization.
Mm. Yeah, and I guess part of the interesting thing around virtual reality and these kind of more immersive formats is that I've had a chance to meet a number of different architects over the years, and some of them had been coming from more of this paper architecture or speculative architecture tradition, where they found that they were able to start to actually build out some of these concepts and give people more of an immersive experience of it without having to build the physicality of it, but still give people a spatial and experiential, like, or to give them a spatial experience of those ideas. And so maybe you could talk a bit about like where did either virtual reality or these immersive dome formats start to enter into your radar and as a potential outlet for some of these speculative architecture ideas.
That's like happened my shift from designing on the paper to more kind of new media or new tools become. Suddenly, I didn't thought about to create something for the movies or in virtual reality. But a couple of years ago, like 7 years ago, Unreal Engine became available for architects, and it completely changed the way I'm working. Yeah, basically, I start designing in real time, and I've seen kind of the result and in hyper-realistic environment, and I don't need to render. And it was completely another jump from the 2D world to the 3D world. But what I was found interesting, because the architectural drawings section plan, when you look from above, you have kind of distinguishable idea or clear vision how building would look like, how this layout of the building would look like. But when you are in space that you kind of fell out on the dynamic environment, and you kind of changing perspective from to human level eye, and it was totally another for me experience to design the building from the human perspective, from the human experience. And that's why I get more passion to start exploring what possible and what kind of format I can present projects.
Hmm. Yeah, I remember talking to architect Andrea Kantakaru, who was talking around how the medium of architecture was actually transmitted through like 2D photos or renders, where you would output a render of a building and start up again. Okay. So yeah, she was saying that even though, you know, architects are building these buildings, that a lot of the transmission of ideas and what the jury would be looking at, how it was being judged, was how good could you make a 2D render of that building. And her perspective was that sometimes it may look good in that render, but it may not feel good, or may not, like, the experience of it may be completely different. So it sounds like you're talking around something similar around wanting to do the architecture from the human perspective, but maybe you could just elaborate on that, what that meant for you to have this kind of first person perspective of the architecture rather than this kind of omniscient third person, like photo render of it.
Yeah. For me, the process of design was mostly like as a fine arts. Yeah, that what we're still drawing in two dimensional or on the paper, and basically it's we design as a sculpture, yeah, or as a painting on the wall. But and always design was from outside in, from the big scale to small, and then on last moment or last stage, end user was appear as interior in interior design. Where, and I think this new media, new interactive, or this kind of gamification of entire design process, bring viewer or end user people on the first stage. Yeah, with for me very interesting now to design from inside out. And the second very important, I think, aspect, because when it's drawings, usually static, but understanding of the space and for when we start moving through the space, the movement dynamic becomes very important to have this kind of subjective understanding of space. And this video or the film become a design tool for the architecture.
So being able to take and build a building in Unreal Engine and then create a cinematic out of that, that's moving through the space?
Exactly. And sometimes even the movement is first, and then the space will add it. Yeah, I add first for the, especially I'm designing buildings for the movie, and I really become as a cameraman in the virtual environment, and I set up the camera, I set up kind of speed, and then I start adding architectural elements, and that's kind of for me another perspective also to design the building, and then I see how this past is shaped by different forms.
Yeah, and then so it sounds like that you're starting with the Unreal Engine, starting to create these more dynamic moving images through, or these camera tracks through the space that then creates a cinematic that kind of gives you a spatial experience of the space that then when you start with that, you're building the building around that. Is there at any point that you start to use virtual reality to like more fully embody yourself into the space? So to go beyond just the frame of the video, but to actually feel what it feels like to be kind of immersed in the space from VR's perspective. Just curious to hear if that ever came into your workflow.
And yeah, at the same time when Unreal Engine, I started working on Unreal Engine, the map was purpose to show it for the big audience. And actually, I was forced to do one film for the Planetarium at the beginning. I even have no idea about this full dome or Planetarium format. And one project was a commercial project, and our partners invited me to visualize this idea. And this full dome project, very addicted. Yeah, when you start working on this, become a little like a junkie of this immersive experience. But I never did the videos for the VR glasses, or because I think the architecture has to be perceived collectively. We in VR, it's give the idea of space, but we are missing there. It's not kind of in the planetarium, in dome, we are see ourselves like it's mix of physical and digital environment. We see our body. It's kind of our scale to the virtual environment, and I think it's very important to see our body. We are physical. And just in virtual background.
Yeah, so it sounds like that that really the dome experience was a real format and a way for you to start to use the affordances of the dome to then have these collective experiences. And there's two types of domes, the more concentric domes where it's more of like if you think of a 360 video, you're taking the top half of that video and then having like a concentric seating where people are kind of seated all around, and so they need to be able to see what is up on the screen from any perspective and for it to still make sense, which is hard because usually, you know, there's like a bias towards one direction or another for most ways that this kind of format this kind of immersive media is created. There's also the front-facing domes where people are facing towards a dome, and it's a different slice. And so I'm just curious, as you've been exploring dome content for architecture, if you've worked in both formats of the more forward-facing and the more where you're looking up in the planetarium, or if you work with both and if you prefer one or the other. And yeah, just curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, mostly I'm focusing on directional content because it's still kind of next step for the new cinema. Yeah, because you have kind of story and not omnidirectional, because it's possible to do omnidirectional content, but it's a little bit limited because you always, as you said, looking upwards, and dome has a sweet spot, and it's very crucial for the architectural presentation, because if you're somewhere on the side of the dome sitting, everything would be banded in one way, and it may be just the best place has to be in the middle of the dome. But when it's omnidirectional, people sitting on the edges of the dome, because usually in the middle it's lens for the star projections, and that's how kind of traditional planetarium was designed. But now this hardware start change the format and to more cinematic and directional storytelling.
Okay, yeah, because at the Doc Lab this year, they, for the first time that I can remember, they kind of blocked off a number of the seats that would be like, and you said there's a sweet spot, and there's like the opposite of that, which would be like the worst spot to see it, where you're at the opposite and everything's upside down or just doesn't make any sense. And so, there is a sense of kind of a cinematic tracking as you're going through these worlds. And I wasn't in the sweet spot. I was more kind of like off to the side slightly. And so as I was looking up at it, there was still maybe, from the translation into the more omnidirectional format there, there seem to be when you're in VR, you can see everything in its proper scale and balance. But sometimes on the omnidirectional, things kind of get warped in a way that I was in my mind, I wonder if this is a non-Euclidean space, or like trying to design for a space, if it's deliberately kind of twisted, or if it's just I'm in a not optimal space to see this. And so, yeah, I'm just curious, as in your piece that you're showing here at Doc Lab, if you were really starting to kind of twist the space a little bit, or if that was just an artifact of the omnidirectional dome.
I think it's kind of both, and little also, sometimes when you sit in look the movie upside down, it becomes like abstract art. But usually I try to extend the space, planetarium, to kind of virtual environment, and try to bring kind of real scale to the space, and to this, for me, it is extension of the space. And of course, like when we start doing the journey and camera starts slightly moving through the space, maybe the perspective seems to be weird, but when we are looking and the camera dynamic and the horizon always changes up and down, I don't know, at least for me, the brain become like adapted to this, and you already don't see that this perspective is wrong. Yeah, when the camera kind of guide you through this space.
Nice. Well, I want to dig into the piece that you're showing here at Doc Lab, but before we do that, I want to go back to like where you began with some of your first pieces, because you sounds like in your journey that you discovered this immersive dome format as a way that you sort of became addicted to wanting to produce work for that format and have audiences be able to experience it in a way. And so maybe you could talk around like, what was the context under which that you're able to develop some of the first content, architectural, kind of artistic cinematics, and then have an audience to be able to see it? Like, how did you start to have a way of exhibiting and distributing this type of art?
Yeah, I was basically learning the program of Unreal Engine, and I had the model of Manhattan, just simple 3D model of Manhattan, and one project of one competition. And I opened Unreal Engine, started sculpting some abstract space, rotating, multiply this Manhattan models. And then, okay, I thought, like, I will try to understand how this fisheye strange lens works. And in Germany, we had a festival in Jena. It's the oldest Fulldom festival. And I submit the film. It was very short, maybe 5 minutes. It was in format of short movies for the planetariums. And it was nominated. And was like good feedback. And I did just for testing in the studio. And then it kind of was good motivation to try something else and more in more kind of conscious way.
Mm. And so how many pieces have you created now?
I think 7 or 8. Mm. And I'm working on 2 new movies.
Okay, and so yeah, I'd love to maybe we'll go through quickly those each one and sort of describe and what you're trying to do. I've only seen the last one that you've done, or at least the one that's showing here at Doc Lab. And so, so it sounds like you started with taking a map of Manhattan, and then is there like a provocation or a question that you're asking, or like is it more of like how can I take this spatial object and start to mess with it and twist it and see how it looks in an architectural context?
Yeah, well, it was just an experiment. Was not questioning any provocation on this model or on this project. And I was just playing with the light and understand like how, because it was interesting how the also light works in dome, because we're dealing with the physical light and projection, and when it's super bright inside of the dome, it kind of all magic is disappear. And I start playing with the light as a kind of also design tool to show not everything but as elements, and then element kind of telling the story about space. And it was back and forth experiment with this kind of space light and camera movement.
Yeah, trying to get the primitives of space and lighting and just kind of understand like what you're able to do in the Unreal Engine, because there's going to be a difference between what you see in a 2D screen on the Unreal Engine as you're producing it than how it appears on the dome. And so how would you like go back and forth or reduce that gap between, because there's a distance between what it looks like in the dome and what it looks like on your screen. And so how do you start to get a sense of that understanding? Is it that you have access to it, or you have to see it and play it, or just talk about that process of how you start to iterate to understand how to do this translation for what it's going to look like when you're working at it at home, and then what it's going to ultimately look like when you're finished.
Yeah, at the beginning was just a guessing. First 1-2 movies was I still see it as a 2D, and then I can see it as a 2D but fish eye format. Now we at the studio we have Little Dome, 3.5 meter, and I can see it, I can preview it, can test it. But mostly like when I produce like 7 movies, I already understand how this environment even works in 2D on 2D screen. But of course very important to test the speed of the camera, because that's I don't see or I don't feel in a flat screen. Because when you see the 360 image in everything at once, it goes everywhere, the image, but not understanding of a kind of immersive feeling when you feel in the stomach when the camera rotating, or how the camera goes, just possible to test in the mini dome or maybe with VR glasses, but I have a privilege to test this in the dome.
Yeah, here at Doc Lab, there's like a little mini dome that's in the exhibition space. Is that around the same size, the one that's here?
Yeah, same size. Similar, yeah. I think it's also 3 meter dome.
Okay, so yeah, you're able to have a 3 meter dome to get a sense of, like with a projector, and then how do you get it from Unreal Engine onto the projector? Is it like directly connected up and you just hit play, or do you have to render it out, or...?
I need to render it, because the quality of the streaming, at least like in our playback system, it's not good enough. Of course, like I can connect the Unreal Engine and to design it, but it's a little bit, I would say, not healthy to work in design right in 360, because you just get tired quickly. But I still working on 2D screen, and then when it goes to animation, then I basically work in dome. But I will usually I prefer to render to have a better quality to see it. And Unreal Engine, it's rendering or live streaming almost similar.
Okay. And so what was the second project that you started to do then?
It was actually like I did first project, and then pandemic came, and that was kind of everybody was locked at the home. And I started experimenting with different films. And second, I think I did about suprematism. And the idea was how to translate suprematistic painting that was also always remain as on paper to three-dimensional composition. And was about Malevich and his exhibition that was 100 years ago. And basically I translate this exhibition to the full dome, small journey.
You said there was an artist that would always be on the paper. Do you mean it was another architect that was trans? Or maybe just elaborate on what you mean by a little bit more context for the artist that you were translating.
No, this was big manifesto of his Malevich and his famous art, Black Square. And the idea was that we need to change a classical world to more kind of geometrical kind of, yeah, it was his manifesto of changing the new style of everything. That people should also be a rethink as a geometrical forms. And but then it his this manifesto was had a big impact to Bauhaus school in Germany, and then it was also realized in some way in U.S. Yeah, this kind of all new, but his painting, this Black Square, and many his suprematistic ideas was just illustration as a fine arts. But the idea was really to start. It was idea of the space.
Hmm. Okay, so and this is during the pandemic, and was there an opportunity to show it anywhere, or were people still in lockdown?
Actually, it was opportunity to show in the planetariums for the festivals, but of course, like was limited numbers of seats. And but usually the film is very interesting. Like when I release some films, it become active or become to life in screen in a couple years later, like maybe in 1 year later, and then it start traveling for different festivals, and I basically follow the film with with this right after already. Restrictions was easier.
And then by this time, had you already acquired your own mini dome, or at what point did you get your mini dome to be able to do like pre-visualization or to give a sneak peek? Did you get that pretty early, or at what point did you get that?
It was also like during pandemic, and it was a good offer because for every companies was a big crisis to sell this dome, and the whole industry was kind of like shocked for that, and it was good kind of sale price, and we got this tool. As a tool.
So everyone's sheltered at home and working from home, but you're able to have your own dome to be able to continue to work on your work.
Yeah, exactly. But I was lucky at home, and dome was in the studio. But yeah, was back and forth between home and studio to test it. But now it's I just already less and less use this mini dome because it have kind of already understanding of the format.
You kind of have you're able to do that translation in your mind now, that you're able to just look at the 2D screen and not have to see it because you kind of know what to expect.
Exactly. And I for me also interesting how composition works in this fisheye format. And yeah.
Okay. So let's move to your third piece. What was the third project that you worked on?
I don't remember because it's like seven films, and it was now everything mixed together. I think it was Labyrinth, and Labyrinth I also was inspired by some work, and I thought like the Labyrinth, it's a good element that combined together cinema and architecture together. Yeah, and Labyrinth is a space where we have to constantly move, to get out of the space to find the exit. Same in the movie, we were kind of in kind of linear way. It, from the beginning of the movie, we need to see or like what happening in the story visually. And it's was kind of also idea of kind of moving images, like when we in the city, we always kind of influenced by very different environments, like perspective always change, and that's kind of make also similarity with the films when the images all time edit, you know, and was the idea of Labyrinth to unite, to combine architecture and cinema together.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess one of the challenges with motion and movement in domes is that sometimes people can be susceptible to motion sickness. And I know that within the context of 360 videos, there's sort of like things that, you know, are motion sickness triggers in terms of like doing yaw rotation, so turning left or right, or kind of twisting anytime you're kind of messing with the horizon line. Just curious, as you were starting to experiment with movement of the camera, like if you were experiencing some of those motion sickness things yourselves to be able to calibrate to see what was comfortable for you, or what that process was to ensure that you were creating a comfortable experience for people as they were watching these more cinematic moving shots in a dome context.
Yeah, thanks for question. Good question, because I'm a very big fan of the camera movement, and I think it's very strong elements for the storytelling, and especially in full dome format when the audience become the main actor, because audience are surrounded by space, and I with the camera I basically guide people through this this virtual environment. And camera, when I do different rotation, could accelerate or increase this immersive feeling or sickness, but it could be used also to articulate something in the movie. And I always try to combine different speed, and when it's gets slower, and then when we need to highlight something, the camera can make slight shift. And when we are traveling by parabola, up and down, that's you still feel in the stomach, but you don't head dizzy. And when camera start rotating and going down, then it's already get a little bit painful. But it could be also used as a to wake up audience for a certain moment. Yeah, we are approaching some kind of part of the story that we need to wake up.
Yeah, I've seen a number of creators do that over the years, where they sort of do things that may be deliberately inducing motion sickness, but do it in a narrative context that helps to emphasize the point that they're making. So doing acceleration is another thing that can be a trigger for folks. So kind of speeding up the camera at a certain moment. So, but yeah, it sounds like that, you know, you're able to kind of find the rhythm of how the camera movement can start to help tell the overall spatial journey and the story that you're telling.
Yeah, that's all this. I'm still exploring what is possible with the camera, and I would say the camera path is the bone structure for the whole film. And
nice. And so maybe just talk about some of, you know, we talk about some of the other projects that you worked on in terms of the themes or content, and it sounds like so far that you would maybe start with like a concept or idea, or like where do you usually begin with each of these projects? Like what's your process in terms of like having like a question of like, what would this look like? Or if you're exploring concepts or ideas, and yeah, like where are you beginning with each of these projects?
Yeah, that's as a beginning, I said I was working 3 years just on the competition, and it was big background on like big library of the not realized projects. And now I basically bring this all ideas, what I did 10 years, 15 years ago, back to life, and rearranging with the different stories. One of was film Local Dystopia and Global Utopia, and I had three different dystopian projects, and I thought like to combine them in one short story. And my friends always ask me, what you doing? Because like I'm posting some fisheye videos, and they said, okay, it's painful painful to watch, and I thought it's not for the watching on the screen, it's watching for the DOM. And I understand that people didn't understand what this DOM is, and then I became with the idea that I need to explain what is the DOM. And the DOM in my movies, this local dystopia, is a gateway to different stories. And maybe it was inspired by Christopher Nolan in Inception, when the movie explored the worlds of dreams. I'm exploring through the, and we fell in deeper and deeper into different dreams, and in my movie was DOM is the gateway to another reality, and on the end we also appearing back in the planetarium in another DOM, and try to, you know, blow the boundary between which world is real and where, kind of.
Yeah, kind of an Inception. You're in the dome, but then watching a film about a dome, and then you're going outside of the dome, and then returning to the dome. So yeah, what layer of the matrix are you in?
Yeah, exactly. That, and also, dome becomes like architectural and cinematic elements for the story.
Hmm. Nice. Okay, so it sounds like you had this backlog of other projects that you were sort of making your way through, of seeing if you could sort of reignite these speculative ideas, but then give like an embodied experience for them. Were there other projects that you were turning into a DOM project? Were there other some of the other pieces that you were working on? Were there other pieces that you went back into that 3 years after your graduation with some of these speculative ideas? Were there any of those other ideas that you were working on for in the context of this competition that you then revisited to translate into an immersive DOM experience? So the question is, you had those 3 years of DOME, of a competition pieces. You mentioned you wanted to explain what the DOME is, but you said you wanted to revisit some of those early experiences. So as we're going through your projects, I'm just wondering if any of those other projects we haven't talked around yet are referring back to those 3 years of DOME, or those 3 years of paper architect, speculative architecture pieces that you were thinking about, if you went back and started to actually translate any of those other pieces in competition into a DOME experience.
No, it's they always kind of mixing with the different ideas. Sometimes so the suprematism was absolutely new kind of idea to experiment, to bring. And this internal habitat, it was also a mix of two different competition about. I did some empty room that people has to be to fill the time in empty room without anything, without any gadgets. And you need to be locked for like, 1 day, but it was long time ago. The project was not so many also iPhones or social media at the same time, but at the same project was idea to basically to show that the environment was kind of time, that's our room, it's a dynamic space that brings us through the time. And basically this is what this latest film, Internal Habitat, was also old ideas, but kind of a little bit remixed with different new stylistic elements. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I'm looking forward to digging into more of what I saw with the Eternal Habitat. But before we do that, is there any other projects that you think are worth mentioning in terms of either ideas that you're exploring or other projects that you're working on before you worked on Eternal Habitat?
Yeah, we have always kind of idea with my friends to bring symphonic orchestra inside of the dome, and that when we are moving through this space, that the space start reacting to the music and rearrange samples of classical music on new abstract way. And then when you have samples of it. But we always postponing this project, and I hope that would be kind of my next project after the Internal Habitat, because I usually for the festivals I don't have any kind of deadlines, and some project I start early and not finish, and I start another project and I finish another project, and yeah.
So it sounds like you've got a lot of projects in the works, and as you're kind of jumping around, maybe deadline to deadline or project to project. So, okay, so maybe we'll move to the Eternal Habitat now. And so this piece, it sort of starts off with it's kind of rotating around this big, open, vast room that is pretty sparse. There isn't a lot of things that are in there, but there's also some more kind of fluid column-like entities that are maybe up in the corner, and then we kind of dive into that more, but maybe you could just describe, like, where did you begin with this project, and like, how did it like come about?
Yeah, the project was the whole idea about empty room that we need to be seated for and get bored and to start filling the time. But then and second idea was about it's just, I don't know if you know this, how it's called, I'm sorry that have forget it, columbarium. The columbarium is basically the vertical graveyard for the ashes, yeah? And it was like a little bit depressive to call the project or film columbarium. But the idea was this, the lady, she's in room, she don't know what is happening outside, and her world kind of black and white, and I try to play with the light that just highlighting her maybe memories or elements or people she remember, and what is in darkness we don't know, we need to imagine what is in the darkness. But from the ceiling it's a little kind of different light coming, or even color, and probably she doesn't know what is happening down, and the environment is static, and we're just kind of flying around, and she changes, action also become different, but on the end we're flying away from this room, and we see it's kind of dynamic room that bring to this kind of vertical columbarium, and we land to one slot and coming back to the same room.
Yeah, and so these ideas of the empty room and the columbarium, and it sounds like that you're sort of have a narrative and a story that is kind of guiding us through this. And as I was watching it, it felt like more of a dream, like I'm walking into a dream and there's all these symbols and spatial representations. And I don't quite know what the meaning of the symbols are, but I'm just sort of being taken on this journey of this kind of unexpected place. And it starts off pretty normal in the sense that you're in this room that I kind of understand what the context is. And then we're kind of going into the space that is beyond any context I've ever been in. It feels like a kind of transcendent journey beyond space and time into all these kind of more abstract shapes and forms, and more of a way of kind of going beyond our existing contextual references and going into this kind of almost psychedelic journey type of place, or at least a place that's an altered state of consciousness or a state of being that feels more of like a dream that I don't quite understand or grok. And it's like this mysterious place that I'm trying to understand the logic of it. And so as you were creating this kind of journey from the mundane to this transcendent, a more abstract space, as you're developing this, are you starting with this kind of outline of the story, or mashing up these two ideas, or maybe just walk through your process of how you're kind of creating this journey that you're taking us on?
No, yeah, it was like a plan, the story is very short, like 6 minutes, and it's more kind of also as a visual clip, because I have a music, it's my friend, he is a composer of and conductor of Berlinische Philharmonie, Aurelien Bella. He's composed music for that, and it was good guidance to have, because music always has own dramaturgy, and for me was this idea to have a little bit unexpected moment on the end of the movie, yeah, that we are kind of get used to one place at the beginning, that's that we already know what is happening, and suddenly we are drop to the another unexpected, colorful, and dynamic environment, and then, I would have a little bit more kind of unexpected moments in the movie, try to, bring all time.
And so, when you were developing this piece, did you start with the visuals and the idea, or did you get the piece of music from your friend and then work from that? Just trying to get a sense of how you're kind of iterating between the different modes and where you're beginning.
Yeah, the environment was designed before, and the images of the rooms and how lights create the composition of this black and white room, and also the vertical structure was also designed before. But then when the camera start moving and the camera kind of, I try to guide the camera to show what is especially happening in certain moment, certain time, and here the music came, and basically I was following the music for the camera path.
Okay, so then you had a rough sense of the space, but then once the music came in, then you were able to listen to the music and help kind of direct the motion and the movement to help match the music to this kind of more abstract space.
Yeah, exactly. It was kind of straightforward process, just to have like a markers where what I need to see, and we just discuss what kind of instrument I very like prepared piano. Whereas always this kind of strange little modified sound of the classical piano. And we also discuss what kind of instrument or what kind of abstraction of the music become on the end, but structure of the music, rhythm, and this kind of melody was before.
Yeah, I always find that the music can help help me become more immersed into the piece, draws out my emotions and kind of gives a sense of a pace and a rhythm that feels like it. You're able to then match as you're kind of having all these movements at the cameras. And so in this, I had a question around the, so what's striking to me is that in traditional architecture, you have usually the production of like static buildings, but then when you have like more speculative architecture, maybe into these more immersive virtual spaces, you're able to have like more dynamic or moving architecture. I mean, you're moving a camera through it in a way that you're able to, like architects have always designed spaces for people walking through to, you know, create closed corridors and then open it up. And so there is a way that there's been a tradition within architecture to kind of think around the movement of people moving their body through a space and then having like a spatial journey in that sense. But it feels like there's both the, in this virtual architecture, you're able to kind of move a camera in a way that you're designing the space from that camera from the inside out, but also have more elements that are changing or dynamic in a way that maybe there isn't an existing architectural medium that gives you that much flexibility to kind of modulate space in a more dynamic way. So just curious to hear some of your thoughts on the types of more dynamic architecture that you're able to do in a virtual space that you can't really physically build.
Yeah, this is super interesting because like first it's a movement of the person or the audience through the space, and then the space also start reacting to and it's another for me a kind of level of design or more kind of scenography, like in the theater, that you have little elements that even appears accordingly to your perspective. And of course it's just possible in the virtual world, not in the physical, but I would say it's give kind of additional skills, additional understanding of dynamic movement and dynamic changes or dynamic adaptation. And for me, very interesting to move. Usually, like as an architect, I do perspective, and then I find another perspective and draw it. And now I'm combining these different images through this kind of dynamic transition. And architecture, for me, it's become as a process of movement from space, from one space to another space. It basically process.
Yeah, and it's got new audiences for this as well, where when you're doing the more speculative architecture, it was only for architects, but now you're doing this for a general audience. And so I can just say from like looking at it and watching the experience of seeing these different pieces, I'm always drawn to these artists that have a background in architecture, because I think they're coming from a place of kind of understanding the relationship to space and the experience of that. And I feel like that these immersive mediums is like a really one-to-one translation where they've, you know, spent a lot of their training to be able to do that type of like spatial expression. And so I'm just curious to hear a little bit of some of the different reactions of like general audiences that are able to, rather than architects reading about this in architectural magazines, you're able to take some of these concepts and ideas and share it to more general audiences that can have their own direct experience of that. And so I'm just curious to hear a little bit of what that's been like for you to kind of reach new audiences with this way of expressing architecture.
Yeah, that's what's always lack of the information or sharing information with a broader audience, or also for the young generation. One of my goals is to really promote architecture through this immersive film for the young students, young architects who, not even architect, but who doesn't know what this architecture is. And I hope the students can also, or kids can come to planetarium and not see only astronomical content, but we're living in an urban space. They could question, maybe someone want to become an architect after watching the movies or something like that, because I think the planetarium, it's the space that belongs to the city. It's great stage that's combined many different disciplines, that science, this artists, architects, planners, politicians can come together and discuss any problems or any challenges that related to the city. And I think it's a great platform.
And have you had a chance to show some of your work to other architects? And I'm just curious to hear what their reaction has been, or what kind of conversations you have with them that allows you to maybe communicate some of these different concepts or ideas in a way that you would only be able to express through like photos or these architectural magazine articles.
Yeah, I'm not discussing so much with architects. Like architects always has kind of, as an artist, I don't know how to explain, but more kind of own vision to the projects. But like I'm working in an architectural studio, and we're still kind of doing also different researches and about mobility, urban mobility, and we're all kind of contributing to one commercial films about how city might change, or what kind of new technology could change our urban environment. But then it's many architects, not only me, working on a more realistic project that could also be more in more serious way explained in them.
Yeah, and it sounds like you've been doing a lot of work in this more artistic context of, you know, using these new emerging technologies and the immersive dome experiences. Have you been doing any other like more traditional architectural work on the side, or as a continued practice of kind of building, designing things that are going to be built?
Yeah, I'm more focusing on my architectural background work on the research, and we're doing like working consistently for 13 years already on how new modes of transportation can change, what kind of new infrastructure we need for the electric transportation, micromobility, and we think in the format of the, neighborhoods that, for example, our building is quite small for to test different transportation modes, and urban scale, it's too big, it's not so flexible, and that's kind of, we try to experiment what we need to rethink, how we need to rethink neighborhoods environment to think it as a three-dimensional landscape rather than separate buildings.
Yeah, it sounds like that speculative architecture is in this kind of urban design or world building context? When you are talking about these contexts, is this something that's more near term or long term, or just trying to get a sense of like this type of work, what the output of that is?
Yeah, we try to bridge the gap between architecture and mobile world, and we're collaborating with different automotive companies and institutions like Schindler Elevator, Audi, and was some companies also in Germany who is providing. And we are just try to explain or find the way how, what kind of new cities we need for example, if we need just we use in the city bicycles or e-bikes, and we, for example, need to travel just in the neighborhoods, not using any elevators or staircase, but we using bicycle to reach different floors and different levels. It's still as a more kind of conceptual proposal, but then it could be implemented with a small scale, and it could kind of rising the dialogue between mobile companies and cities.
And is there any way that your work in this more artistic expression of speculative architecture is feeding back into this more traditional work of architecture?
Yeah, I would say like to stuck always in a conceptual project, it's I would say not productive, but kind of you stuck with you lose the physics, yeah. You lose the gravity with the speculative all projects, and combination of reality and speculation. It's always good to like it's enriching both directions.
Yeah, I remember a number of years ago, I was invited to the Architectural Association in London by Frederick Helberg and Larry Lesmus, and they take a little drink. They were holding a gathering that was around the future of the immersive internet. And so they were gathering a lot of architects, but also people that were working in these virtual spaces. And they had some conversations with some more traditional architecture professors there. And, you know, this discussion of virtual architecture as contrasted to the kind of material aspects of architecture. And there was a lot of skepticism from the traditional architects in terms of like, if it is truly like architecture, because there's so much of the architectural tradition that was connected to the material and the materiality of like the different like heat dissipation that happens for ways that the kind of more embodied experience of a physical space that has a lot more stuff that is completely lost from what happens in the virtual architecture. And it was interesting just to hear from Frederick Helberg and Laura Lesmus and kind of going through, okay, here's what we, in the design practice of virtual architecture, we have, you know, these different qualities, and then these are exactly the same as this, you know, in traditional architecture, but still at the same time, there seemed to be this split within the architectural community between those who wanted to kind of maintain that tradition of the materiality versus those that were going into the more virtual. I'm just curious if you've kind of encountered that kind of like culture shift within your own experience and work.
Yeah, thanks for the question. I'm not so much like involved to architectural discussion, more in the disciplinary collaboration with neuroscience, with psychologists, how we're perceiving space. And from my point of view, like from my perspective, or what I would really interested to bring emotional design, emotional speculative design, not about what we don't need, what we can't realize, or it's utopian some project, but speculative or subjective perspective, yeah, from the perspective of the people. And I would call this the cinema or the immersive cinema a great design tool or virtual architecture can bring another perspective to the physical design through the user experience, because the user give the real feedback, and I'm just a translating kind of human emotions to the space. I'm not designing, I'm translating.
Yeah, imagining a future where you could create a number of different cinematics of different spaces and sort of see what resonates with people or is the most emotionally evocative in a way that could then inform the spaces that are designed as a form of sort of user testing of sorts.
Yeah, maybe like in the future, I believe that the architects won't be needed because the AI buildings could react to the human emotions immediately. But yeah, for now, we can integrate the user to the design process.
Yeah, I'm still a big fan of humans in the loop and feel like that there's ways that humans can sort of digest this. I'm hesitant to sort of submit to my AI overlords too much of how much power that we're giving away to, mostly because it's like who's controlling the AI and who's benefiting. So you have a lot of deep questions around some of the deeper trends. But yeah, I'm a fan of humans still being the primary decision makers, especially at a design level.
Yeah, and that's... I think that's what we're exploring, what we try to understand, that it's not just a artwork or but how we can use this, how we can use this art technique and this full-dom format to ask people what they think about the urban future of the city where they're living. And given real feedback, real like response.
Nice. And so what's next for you? It sounds like you have a lot of projects that are ongoing, a lot of irons in the fire, but where do you want to take your work here in the future?
I still very enjoying exploring what is possible for architectural storytelling in full dom. And now I'm trying to slowly convince the planetariums, and it's very hard, that it has to be different content shown in the domes. And I think I just keep doing this, some films, and hope finally we realize this project together with our friends about the symphonic orchestra combined with the virtual space. And yeah.
Nice. And are you doing a lot of like audio spatial design with that as well, or kind of using the spatial affordances of different types of spatial audio systems that are available in the domes and kind of like push forward what's even possible?
This, I would say, from my experience, more simpler. I was more focusing on the music and or spatial music, but not spatial sound. This is VFX or sound effects, yeah. And I try to collaborate with different musicians, and because it's always, you know, exchange and always different perspective to different colors to the projects, and yeah.
Nice. And and finally, what do you think the ultimate potential of all this immersive art and architectural storytelling in the dome might be, and what it might be able to, what it might be able to enable? So, where do you think this is all going, and what it might be able to enable?
I think the full dome become kind of new. I hope new standard for the cinema. Yeah, it's not. It's more even stronger than IMAX, and it's immersive cinema where. We need to rethink also the cinematic storytelling. And for example, like it need to be totally kind of new rules, or not new rules, but some exploration. How would this new cinema would look like? And for all, I hope for the all this kind of special films need to be designed. You know, we're telling special stories here in Planetarium in full dome format.
Mm. Nice. And is there anything else that's left unsaid that you'd like to say to the broader immersive community?
No, I'm very happy to be in Doc Lab this year, and very honored to show little piece to audience in Amsterdam, and it's incredible also exchange, and I get so much inspiration here also from another artist. Mm.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for joining me here today on the podcast. You know, I feel like really, I always appreciate talking to architects, because I feel like they're like I said, they have such a interdisciplinary training that allows them to kind of understand the affordances of the spatial medium of both VR, AR, these immersive dome experiences. And so it's always interesting to see a crossover between this kind of like the use of these mediums to tell spatial stories, to do world building, and to kind of like show what's possible with the medium from all these kind of years of training. And then also this kind of intersection of paper architects and the speculative architecture and the way that you're able to ground some of these speculations and concepts and provocations into these immersive spatial journeys that we can have an embodied experience of. And so, yeah, it kind of took me into this kind of otherworldly space that, you know, didn't know quite what to expect or where I was going. And I always appreciate kind of being in this state of awe and wonder of not knowing where it's going to go next. And I feel like your work is really kind of starting to explore that. And yeah, just really enjoyed the journey of it all. So thanks again for joining me here on the podcast to help break it all down.
Thank you so much for an interesting question and for inviting me to share these ideas. Thanks. Thank you.
That's all that we have for today. And I just wanted to thank you for listening to the Voices of VR podcast. If you enjoyed the podcast, then please do spread the word, tell your friends, and consider becoming a member of the Patreon. This is a listener-supported podcast, so I do rely upon donations from people like yourself in order to continue to bring this coverage. You can become a member and donate today at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.